Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg. On Tuesday, after two presidential elections, three congressional elections, a Supreme Court decision, and despite a government shutdown, a major part of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, went into effect. The insurance exchanges went online, allowing those without insurance to choose between a number of different plans. How many options you have depend on what state you live in and what county you live in. What do these new exchanges and the new requirements mean for North Central Wisconsin? What do they mean for the people who aren't covered by their employers? For the people who have never been able to get insurance because of pre-existing conditions? For the people who don't want insurance but now have to buy it? For the 92,000 people who have been thrown off Badger Care because of the governor's refusal to accept the federal Medicaid expansion money? For women and children? And equally important, for our health care providers, will the Affordable Care Act be a blessing for them because fewer people will be showing up in emergency rooms for routine care, or will it be a burden that ultimately sticks them with the tab? Our guest today, Sid Sigelski, he's the Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Finance of Aspirus Incorporated and Aspirus Wausau Hospital. Also in our studio, Laura Scuderi, she's the Executive Director of the Bridge Community Health Clinic, which serves many Medicaid patients. And joining us by phone, Sarah Finger, the executive director and founder of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health. We'll also hear from Gary Bazooka, the CEO of North Central Healthcare, which provides mental health, substance abuse, and long-term care for people in a three-county area in central Wisconsin. We also want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742 if you've got concerns or questions about the new Affordable Care Act law. And we imagine you do. Our lines are open. We'll be taking calls in about 10 minutes. That number again is 1-800-780-9742. And we tried to get a representative from Security Health Plan. That's the insurance company that's affiliated with the Marshfield Clinic and which is offering insurance plans across North Central Wisconsin on these new exchanges. They agreed to do the program when we originally scheduled it last week, but they were unable to join us today, and we regret that. It was because of a serious scheduling conflict. They wanted to be here, and we hope to get together with the folks from the Marshfield Clinic and Security Health Plan sometime in the future. Sid Sigelski, Aspirus is one of the really big medical providers in North Central Wisconsin, both at your hospital and at your clinics throughout the region. How big of a problem has it been for people without medical insurance going to the emergency room for routine care and then not paying for it?
Well, first off, Glenn, thank you very much for inviting me onto the program. I appreciate it. In terms of our experience at Aspirus, we do see people coming into the emergency department that really would have benefited from preventive care, seeing a primary care physician and so forth. We've not been able to quantify the exact input or the exact amount of that, but I can tell you that over the last year within the Aspirus system, we had about $35 million of at the charge level, not the cost level, the charge mm-hmm. level, of bad debt expense and community care, which means there are a lot of people within the community that do not have this kind of coverage. And I think if you don't have the coverage, you're less inclined to develop a relationship with a primary care provider. As a result of that, you are likely to have illnesses and problems, medical problems that persist over a long period of time without seeking care, and then all of a sudden you are forced to go to the emergency department.
So there are two problems here. You've got people who might be going to the emergency room just for things like the flu or something that they should be getting at a clinic, but you've also got people who aren't seeing a doctor on a regular basis, and they suddenly end up with very serious health problems because they haven't been treating them.
Absolutely. You'll see people with chronic hypertension, congestive heart failure, COPD, pulmonary problems like that. You'll see obesity issues, all kinds of issues that manifest themselves over a long period of time. And when they go untreated for long periods, it does result in the need then occasionally for an episode that results in an emergency room visit.
Now, 3 years ago, when the Affordable Care Act was being debated, we had as a guest Dr. Todd Stewart, who was the vice president of the Marshfield Clinic and a pediatric intensivist physician. He said at the time, and this is a quote, he said, "Medical coverage should be a right and not a privilege." Is that something you agree with?
That's a tough question. I I think there's an obligation that you provide for yourself, that you do commit to playing within the system, so to speak.
So it's a responsibility.
It's a responsibility. So it's not necessarily a right, but I think there is a duty of the community to provide health care to those who don't have the ability to provide it in some manner. So I agree with that piece, but I think also the individual has a responsibility to do what they need to do to reduce the cost of that care.
Well, it is going to be a responsibility legally with these insurance exchanges and the individual mandate, which requires people to have insurance. What is your greatest hope, Sid, and your greatest concerns about these new exchanges?
Well, the greatest hope, I think, is obvious. We'd love to see that $35 million of community care and bad debt turn into at least some portion of payment for us to provide that care. We are experiencing, we have been able to identify, for example, those patients that are pretty much chronic users of the healthcare system at Aspirus but do not have health insurance coverage or Medicaid or so forth. And what we're trying to do is identify those individuals, contact those individuals, and we have counselors who have been certified as navigators within the healthcare marketplace to assist those individuals in enrolling. So we'd like to see them enroll into plans that are affordable for them, obtain a certain level of coverage as a result of that, so that when they do come into our system, there is an ability to pay, and also so that they do get that preventive care before they get into those chronic, untreatable positions where they have to seek then care through the ED. Now, on the opposite end of that, we have about 92,000 citizens in Wisconsin, as you indicated, who are coming off Medicaid, coming off Badger Care. Those, if they do not sign up through the exchanges, will result in higher levels of community care and bad debt for Aspirus. So you have both of those things happening at the same time, and then you have employers who, because the exchanges exist, might then say to their employees, look, why don't you go out to the exchanges, seek your own coverage. We're dropping our group insurance coverage here and maybe compensate them in some way for doing that. But then they have to go to the exchanges, and what if they don't sign up, or what if they don't utilize them?
Well, this is all so new. Have you heard anecdotally of any employers who are doing that?
Well, I think I didn't see the article, but someone told me on USA Today there was an article about a number of larger companies who are telling their employers, go ahead and do that. I've not seen anyone or heard of anyone in the greater Wausau community who is doing that.
Are you concerned that people will sign up for the Affordable Care Act, they'll get an insurance card, they'll come to your hospital for care, and then not pay the copays or deductibles or simply not pay the premiums for the insurance, and that would leave you left holding the tab for this care that you're providing?
Yeah, that is a risk. We anticipate that will happen in some cases. The kind of patient population, for example, that's on Medicaid today that now goes onto the exchange, if we can get them onto the exchange, they're not necessarily used to paying monthly premiums. And if it comes down to, for this particular family, a question of whether they put food on the table or they pay their premiums, they may not pay the premium. We have to somehow verify whether they still have coverage at the point they seek service from us, rather than just the fact that they had the insurance card because they enrolled at one point in time. It's still unclear to us whether these insurance companies will pay us if they're not paying their premium. We're anticipating they may not. So I think that's a risk. Also, as you know, people that don't have a lot of resource, they're probably going to go onto the exchange and buy the cheapest plan they can. And those are going to have high deductibles, maybe even a $5,000 deductible. I have not seen the specifics as to the plans at exchange, although I understand there are four plans there. So if they buy the cheapest bronze plan with very high copays and deductibles, we may end up writing some of that off as either bad debt or community care, or there might be a lot of it written off. We really don't know what this is going to look like yet.
Well, that's Sid Sigelski, the Chief Financial Officer of Aspirus Wausau Hospital, one of our three guests today. Let's move to Laura Scuderi. She's the Chief Executive Officer of the Bridge Community Health Clinic in Wausau. Laura, tell us a little bit about your clinic and the people that you serve.
Sure. Glenn, thank you so much for having me on your show today. Bridge Clinic, we have operated for the past 18 years in Wausau, Wisconsin, and we currently have five clinics clinics all over central Wisconsin, and we are what's called a federally qualified health center, which means that we receive some federal funding to help with our operating costs. We take anybody that walks through our doors, regardless of their ability to pay. That's really our mission, is to provide high-quality health care to everybody. So we do medical services. We do behavioral health and dental services as well. We also provide discount programs, and especially for the uninsured. So, for example, someone who's eligible for a sliding fee scale program would have 100% discount with a $25 copay. So it goes that low.
Well, how many of these community clinics exist around Wisconsin?
There's 18 of us right now.
And what region of the state do you serve? Where do your patients come from? You say you don't, you know, refuse to serve anybody, but where do most of them come from?
Most of them come from Marathon, Lincoln, Langlade, Forest, and Oneida counties.
And how big of a problem is it for your clinic and for community clinics that we've got 92,000 people in the state losing their Badger Care coverage again because the governor did not accept that federal Medicaid money?
Well, it actually really impacts the dental situation. Many people know that there's a dental crisis in the state of Wisconsin, also the nation, where the underserved are not getting preventative dental care. And so we're treating very, very severe issues when it could have been just a simple, you know, preventative matter.
Same thing Sid was saying, you know,
yes.
people put it off.
Right. And so one of the big concerns for most of the community health centers in Wisconsin is that when people lose their Badger Care, they're not going to have the dental benefit anymore. They're going to hopefully go onto the exchanges or remain uninsured. And so the cost of dental care will be on them.
Do you think it's going to be easy for some of these former Badger Care patients to get good quality insurance that they can afford, you know, underline that they can afford on these new exchanges?
It's going to be, I think there's a definite need to explain to the patients the value of health insurance. And that's why we have people all through, we have certified application counselors here in central Wisconsin. Bridge Clinic has one. I know Spirus has a bunch of people that are being certified to help people enroll. I know Marshfield is helping people enroll.
So you're helping people sign up?
Yes.
Give me some specifics about that. What,
sure.
What specifically are you doing?
So we have what's called a certified application counselor. In our area, we got no navigators. We didn't get the grant for a navigator.
Well, let's explain what a navigator is. Because a lot of people are suddenly going to think that we're talking about seafaring or something. a navigator is it's a federal employee, correct?
A state. So they would be state-funded employee to help people.
But help with the federal health exchanges.
Exactly.
And so these people are paid folks who are there to help guide people through the system.
Right. And there were very limited number. There was a very limited funding source for that. So we didn't receive any navigators for our area. Bridge Community Health Clinic did receive funding to hire a certified application counselor. We were one of the only in the area that I'm aware of to receive any funding to support enrollment efforts. And so we hired someone full-time, and their entire job is to walk people through the process of enrollment. Now, they can't give any advice.
Uh-huh.
Certified application counselors cannot give any advice, but they can explain what a deductible is, what a premium is. That's language that most people, especially those who may have been on Badger Care, and it doesn't resonate with them. So we have to explain what the key elements of the program are so that they can make a decision that is best for them.
And how many people have they been seeing in the last couple of days?
Lots. So we've been doing a great deal of education sessions with, you know, in conjunction with the library, in conjunction with the health department. We've been educating different agencies that work with patients who may have questions so that the agencies can answer and make referrals. But right now, since there are glitches to the system, we haven't enrolled anyone yet, but we've been meeting with patients one-on-one so that we can prepare them for that time.
Why don't you give me some specifics to kind of flesh this out?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about anybody specifically, and you don't have to mention a name, that you've been seeing who's losing Badger Care coverage and now is kind of at a loss for what to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, luckily, the majority of people losing Badger Care coverage, we're hoping, are internet savvy so that they won't have much trouble going on healthcare.gov. I know that I've one of my board members actually lost her Badger Care coverage and is now looking for the exchange. She's looking to have the exchange open up for her.
You've got board members on Badger Care
at
the Bridge Community Clinic?
Yes, we do. 51% of our board have to be consumers of our services.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a good system. It actually provides a lot of patient input into our processes.
What kinds of people go to your clinic? I guess that's what I was asking you for. Give me a specific, because I think folks who are not indigent and who do not have to rely on Badger Care, there are a lot of stereotypes.
Right. And so, you know, when you close your eyes and think of what a Medicaid patient looks like, I think it's different than the people that actually present to the clinic. The people that are coming are the working poor, people who have recently lost their jobs, families. So when you think of a Badger Care patient, a lot of our Badger Care patients are children and who are receiving Medicaid and who need dental care, and they need behavioral health, and they need medical primary care.
How commonplace is that in Wausau?
Mm-hmm. Well, just to give you a sense, over 90% of the business we do in dental is Medicaid currently. And for primary care, we have a great deal of Medicaid patients coming in. And especially,
You've got a lot of single moms and kids?
We do. We do have a lot of single moms and kids coming in.
What are your greatest hopes and your greatest concerns? Same question I asked Sid Sigelski for these new exchanges.
My biggest hope is that people understand the value of insurance and are able to get on, able to navigate it well so that they can pick the best plan for them and their families. I think my biggest concern is we've received the agencies in town that I've been working with to collaborate on enrollment efforts receive very little resources to make this a success. And so we've really had to create a grassroots effort to educate people about the enrollment exchange.
Explain that to me. They've received very few resources. Who's to blame for that?
Well, there's been pretty much zero. Well, I wouldn't say zero. We've had very little state support financially for enrollment options. There are other states that have put a lot of dollars into marketing efforts and ensuring people understand the exchanges. We received a grant, Bridge Clinic received a grant to hire a person through federal funding. We didn't receive any state funding.
So you're not getting any help from the state?
Well, we are getting help through the Department of Health Services, but other than that, there's been very little offered to agencies in town to ensure enrollment success.
Laura Scuderi of the Bridge Community Clinic, Sid Sigelski of Aspirus in Incorporated and Aspirus Wausau Hospital. Let's move to our third guest, Sarah Finger. She's the founder and executive director of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health. Sarah, tell us about your organization, why you founded it, and why an organization that's based in Madison should be significant for women and children in north central Wisconsin.
Thanks so much, Glenn. I'm very happy to be joining you this morning. This is such an important issue, and not enough time in 50 minutes to cover it all, but I think everyone's doing a great job trying to shed some light on a very complex but very important issue.
Well, thanks for being here.
The Alliance for Women's Health is a statewide policy organization. We monitor state and federal policies that impact women's health. And we have, for the last few years, since 2008, have been recognizing healthcare reform as a key women's health issue. The system as we've known it has not worked for women and girls in the state, let alone in the country. We find that women as caregivers, as coordinators of care for their family, recognize women healthcare reform as such a crucial opportunity moving forward. And again, the system had been discriminating against women just for being women, had charged them more for their healthcare, had made it very difficult to buy insurance on the private market because of pre-existing conditions like having had a pregnancy, being a domestic violence survivor, having had cancer, having arthritis, were all reasons for the insurance industry to not cover women and any individuals for that matter. The fact that women are caregivers but have been dependent on their spouses for health insurance, and the idea of health insurance being tied into employers has been a scary situation for women, especially women who are domestic violence victims, to have to stay with a husband just to keep on insurance for herself and her family.
So you see some of the new things in the Affordable Care Act, specifically the fact that people with pre-existing conditions have to be covered, and some of the routine procedures that women really need in order to maintain their health, that stuff really being offered free of charge, you see that as a big benefit.
Oh, definitely. The Affordable Care Act is a very large piece of legislation that does a lot of different things to help reform our much-needed system, a healthcare system as we knew it. The idea of really prioritizing prevention care, making sure that there's no out-of-pocket costs for prevention care, like birth control, like breastfeeding supplies, like domestic violence screenings, mammograms, all those things were, in a lot of ways, cost-prohibited for women who had to pay co-pays, who had deductibles tied to those preventative health care services. And so the fact that now women do not have to sacrifice some of their preventative care just to put food on their tables or get school supplies for their kids, that's a huge victory with the Affordable Care Act. And the pre-existing condition protections is enormously important. We are not yet protected with pre-existing condition protection until the first of next year. Children are already covered, so children cannot be denied coverage because of pre-existing conditions, but January 1st of 2014 is a very big date for women and adults alike who have had these pre-existing conditions and have been penalized as such and been charged more and denied coverage because of it.
Now you mentioned contraception. Do you believe that government-subsidized insurance available on the exchanges should cover contraception for women?
I think it's so interesting this issue is even an issue. The fact that 98% of us are using birth control at one point in our lives, the fact that all medical or credible medical organizations support contraception as preventative health care, and the whole idea of taxpayer dollars, we pay $11 billion a year to cover unintended pregnancies and unintended consequences of not being able to plan and prevent unintended pregnancies, plan pregnancies and prevent unintended pregnancies. And so I really wish this wasn't still being demonized and politicized the way it was, but I definitely think it's the right investment to make as a society to invest in prevention care like contraception.
Well, there are people who will tell you they've got legitimate concerns. There are people who say they're opposed to contraception for religious reasons and they don't want their taxes paying for it. How do you respond to them?
Taxpayer dollars have been going towards contraception and coverage for healthcare for a long time through Medicaid and other programs. Again, governors like Governor Tommy Thompson had recognized the importance of investing in family planning and reproductive healthcare services and made sure that Medicaid dollars were invested in preventing teen pregnancies and unintended pregnancies. So it's an old fight that unfortunately continues to be had, but I think in terms of taxpayer dollars, it's such a smart investment for us to make sure that women have this basic health care that most of us need and deserve.
Sarah, you were honored with a Health Watch Wisconsin outreach effort for your work with the Save Badger Care Coalition. Now, I'm assuming you've got concerns about the governor's decision to not accept that Medicaid money, which is causing 92,000 people to lose coverage.
Yeah, this was a huge disappointment for not just organizations, health advocacy organizations like ours, but for the Hospital Association, for the Primary Health Care Association, Public Health Department, our Public Health Association, the Medical Society. Everyone saw it as a win-win to accept the expanded Medicaid opportunity that came with the Affordable Care Act. Despite huge pressure from all of our different entities, the governor did decide to refuse that additional investment into the state, refused to allow individuals, those vulnerable individuals that Laura was talking about, to stay on Badger Care, such a successful program and such a point of pride for our state. And to shift 92,000 people off, people making about $11,000 a year, onto the marketplaces. Mm-hmm. That's not how the Affordable Care Act was set up, and we continue to encourage our governor because the opportunity is still there for us to expand Medicaid in this state.
You were named a champion of change by the White House, right, for your work related to the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
So you're an advocate for the new law. But if the program is as good as you think it is, then wouldn't it be logical that the governor is right and those 92,000 former Badger Care patients should be able to get good quality coverage on the new exchanges?
Actually, Glenn, when the Affordable Care Act was designed, it was designed as a three-legged stool with a strengthened Medicaid program, with a consumer protection aspect into the employer-sponsored insurance world, and then these new exchanges to pick up where people were falling through the cracks. And so the Affordable Care Act was really meant to help those individuals not just at 100% federal poverty level, but those vulnerable populations to be in a strengthened Medicaid system. And unfortunately, when the Supreme Court held up the Affordable Care Act as law, it did allow states to opt out of the expansion for Medicaid. And so the way, again, it's designed, it's not ideal, Glenn, but individuals mm-hmm. can buy into the marketplace, can choose from a tier of levels, whether it's high out-of-pocket costs or low out-of-pocket costs, even just getting catastrophic care. People can now get health care through the marketplace. It's just not how the Affordable Care Act was set up.
All right. I'm going to get all of the controversial stuff out of the way with you right away, Sarah. I want you to react to the new ads paid for by the Koch brothers urging young people to opt out of Obamacare and showing a woman getting a gynecological exam from a creepy-looking Uncle Sam character with the tagline, "Don't let the government play doctor."
Is it Christmas already, Glenn? You just gave me the greatest gift to talk about the hypocrisy with that. You know, as a women's health advocate, I think it's so fascinating that some of the same group of influencers and policymakers who are, you know, touting small government but really invading on a woman's relationship with her provider and her reproductive health care needs are using that same message about small government and personal liberties to talk about the Affordable Care Act. This is not government intrusion. This is a managed care model. It's using the private market. The Affordable Care Act in and of itself is really based on conservative principles out of the Heritage Foundation. I think they recognize that that messaging about government in your private parts is working when we talk about it from a reproductive rights standpoint, that they're using it now to try and appeal to young people, young women, that it's a privacy invasion, and it's not. This is the most empowering opportunity women have to get health care and information. It's not a government intrusion, and again, if we look at what is intruding in the patient care and the physician-patient relationship, it's what these same group of legislators are doing around rolling back, turning back the clock on women's health care.
You've been actively working, Sarah, to get women to sign up for Obamacare. You've told me your hopes for the new exchanges and the new policy. What are your concerns?
I think our concerns are just the misinformation. I think that we're an exhausted society right now. We're dealing with a lot. We have an economy that's stalled out. We have confusion over who exactly is to blame with government shutdown and all these programs. It's again, the Koch brothers are purposely telling people, you know, misinformation, and I'm really concerned about that confusion and what it's going to do to those that really need to clear through the fog and understand the opportunities that come with the Affordable Care Act. You know, and as Laura was saying, our state, Wisconsin, has been noted as having the lowest per capita funding put aside to help groups like Laura and Bridge and others in the state to help with enrollment and outreach. Again, because of Governor Walker's stance on the Affordable Care Act, we are definitely not doing our part to help clear up the static and to make the information accurate and available to our people throughout the state.
Sarah Finger, the executive director and founder of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health, our other guest today on Route 51, Sid Sigelski of Aspirus Hospital, Wausau Institution that's been here for many, many years, and Laura Scuderi of the Bridge Community Clinic. I want to bring Sid and Laura back in. Millions of people have been going on these healthcare.gov websites, the website to check out the exchanges, so many that in some places the system has crashed or there have been long delays. Sid, is this a bad thing or a good thing or a little of both?
Well, I think it's a little of both. It's good that people want to get on, so many people want to get on that they're overwhelming the system. It's bad that I think the preparation for this rollout probably wasn't where it needed to be when it did go live.
And Laura Scuderi, same question.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that I do want to mention is that other states that did take the Medicaid expansion and did take some more preventative measures and were able to set up their own exchanges were actually more prepared for this kind of rollout than we were. And you know, we've already seen that states, including our neighbor Minnesota, have much more success in these early days than we do. And so that wasn't the case here in Wisconsin.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The implementation of the exchanges has been accompanied by a shutdown of the federal government, and I'm going to have to at least touch on that today. How is this affecting Aspirus Wausau Hospital, Sid, and what if it continues for weeks and even results in a default of the federal government on its debt. How does that affect, if it does affect, the bottom line at Aspirus?
Well, right now, because it's a temporary shutdown, it's really not impacting us at all at this point. We believe we'll continue to get Medicare payments from the fiscal intermediaries. So from that standpoint, there's no impact. Even if there was, we would not jeopardize patient care. We'd continue to see all the patients that present themselves to us. We continue to operate in the manner where we can operate. If it goes on long term, I'm not sure exactly what the ramifications are. I'm concerned about the debt ceiling. I think you've got a number of issues that could occur over time when that's hit. So I'm not sure exactly what the long-term ramification might be.
Yeah, and Laura Scuderi, same question. How is it affecting, if it is affecting, the Bridge Community Clinic, and how about other community clinics around Wisconsin?
Well, thankfully, it hasn't really affected Bridge Clinic because our funding streams are stable, but it is affecting some of our community partners, or it will be affecting some of our community partners, including the WIC program, which helps women and infants and children. And they do a nutritional program in addition to a variety of services for women and children. And it also will potentially impact health departments all over the state and other government-run agencies that do support health initiatives in Wisconsin.
Laura Scuderi of the Bridge Community Health Clinic, Sid Sigelski of Aspirus Wausau Hospital, and also Sarah Finger of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the new Affordable Care Act health exchanges. We'd like to hear from you, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back with more right after this.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Peninsula Players, Ganchert Nursery, and Marshfield Clinic, proud supporters of WPR programs. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support for WPR comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, welcoming the return of birds and art. See 125 all-new birds and artworks now through November 10th, along with 5 exhibitions from the museum's collection. More at lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. You are listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about the Affordable Care Act and those new insurance exchanges which rolled out just on Tuesday with Sid Sigelski of Aspirus Wausau Hospital, also Laura Scuderi of the Bridge Community Clinic in Wausau, and we also have Sarah Finger of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health, 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's go to Steve in Adams. Steve, you're on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Glenn. Thank you. I just have a quick question, I know there's a lot of confusion out there, but I retired at 59. I have a real good 401k, and I haven't touched my pension and don't plan on it until maybe 62. But I don't have any insurance, so I took a job part-time, and I'm working about 30 to 35 hours, and my employer pays a big chunk of the health insurance, and I pay a big chunk. So we're talking probably a total premium of maybe $1,400, and we're each paying about half. Is there something that'll fit for me in the new health care that any of the people on the panel would know?
Well, let's go to Laura Scuderi, who's been working to sign people up at the Bridge Clinic. Laura?
Well, I think that in order to determine what your specific situation is, my recommendation would be for you to seek out a certified application counselor in your area. I do know that some employers that offer health insurance, it may be too expensive or maybe inadequate for your needs. You will have the option of looking on the health insurance exchanges to determine if what they offer there is better for you.
With the fact that I am kind of like the working poor, because with that 30 hours I work a week, it virtually goes to pay for the insurance. But I do have a pension, and I do have a good 401k, which I, just because I'm 60 and I haven't elected to tap into it, would that affect that?
And again, you know, I think the best way to go forward is to discuss your specific situation with the certified application counselors who have all the specific details on what may apply and what might, may not, and also could help you determine whether or not you're eligible for any tax subsidies.
Okay, good. That's real helpful because I think, I mean, you've been talking about a lot of the confusion everybody has, and I think that's, I'm probably not that atypical out here where you just are really confused on what's going on. You know, I obviously would like good health care and not be working just to pay for it, but then again, at least I have the opportunity to afford it if I had to. So it's kind of a catch-22 or something. You're kind of caught in a bind here.
I think you're not alone, Steve, and thanks so much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to play a short interview I did earlier this week with Gary Bazooka. He's the CEO of North Central Healthcare, which provides mental health services, substance abuse services, services for people with developmental disabilities, and long-term care for a three-county region in central Wisconsin. And I asked him specifically about these new health exchanges and the impact on North Central Healthcare, which is an organization that serves many people who are on Medicaid or who are indigent.
I think a fairly large percentage of the people that, we see are either indigent or qualifying for governmental health care programs. In our nursing home, over 70% of the residents there are really covered by Medicaid, which is a means-tested program. And on the mental health side, the fairly large portion of our clients have needs for governmental payer, or they're just indigent. The problem with mental health is that the disease itself renders it difficult for individuals to maintain the type of job that would yield health care insurance. So oftentimes they don't have health care insurance, and oftentimes they also don't qualify for Medicaid.
How is the Affordable Care Act, these new insurance exchanges, how do you think that's going to affect you in the weeks ahead?
In the immediate, I think one of the things that we hope we're going to see is that more of the people who are classified as indigent and have no ability to pay, and we have to put on our sliding fee schedule, may have some form of coverage through the exchanges.
The governor rejected the federal Medicaid money, and his position is the people who are being kicked off of Badger Care will hopefully be able to find better insurance through the exchanges. How is that going to affect you?
I think it is going to affect us. I think had the governor accepted the federal subsidy for expansion of the Medicaid program, I think it would have had a tremendous impact on a lot of the clients that we serve in the mental health and the substance abuse world, in that a lot of them don't have access to health insurance and they didn't have access to the Medicaid program. And I think with expansion of the Medicaid program, they would have had access to it and they would have had a payer source, which would have been good for us, and it would have been good for them too. So I think it's unfortunate that we did not accept the subsidy from the federal government for Medicaid expansion.
People with mental disabilities, mental health problems, how easy is it going to be for them now that they're being kicked off of Badger Care to figure out how these exchanges work and sign up for health care through it? Does that pose a problem?
I think it's going to be extremely difficult. These are people who have difficulty navigating through complex systems anyway, and I think while a lot of efforts have been made to make the exchanges, the healthcare marketplace, user-friendly, I think it's still going to be a little difficult. I visited the website myself just the other day, and you know, I would consider myself fairly computer savvy and able to navigate through websites and things like that, and I found it a little difficult myself.
So what are you doing, what is your staff doing in order to ease the transition for your patients?
Well, we're making sure that people know about this, that there is an opportunity, and I know that there are going to be people available to assist people, and we're certainly steering them towards those people so that they can access the kind of help that they'll need to be able to navigate through the exchanges.
Gary, anything you'd like to add?
One of the concerns that I do have about replacing Badger Care and pushing all these people into the exchanges is I think one of the things that we may see happen is that these are people who have never had insurance, they've never been able to purchase insurance, and when they go on the exchanges, I think the tendency is going to be to take the least costly program, the cheapest program that they can find, because they do have limited funds. And I think what they're going to find is that within those programs, there are high copays and deductibles. Once they have health insurance, they're also going to be saddled with debt that they hadn't anticipated related to the copays and deductibles.
All right. Gary, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Gary Bazuca, the CEO of North Central Healthcare, and our panelists today, Sid Sigelski of Aspirus-Wausau Hospital, Laura Scuderi of the Bridge Community Health Clinic, and Sarah Finger of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health. Let's look at some of Gary's big concerns. First, the difficulty for mental health patients who are losing Badger Care coverage and who may not be able to navigate those new health insurance exchanges. Laura, why don't we start with you, and then Sarah, I'd like you to comment on that.
Well, we anticipate that there are going to be patients that, for example, English is a second language, or patients who do not have computer access, or patients who are not particularly computer savvy. And so we're working with United Way 211 and the library systems in central Wisconsin to ensure that there's computer access, that I should also mention you can enroll by phone. You can also enroll by mail. The website is actually called healthcare.gov. And that United Way's 211 has really been helping people who call in to determine where they should go in order to get one-on-one help with enrolling in the exchange.
Sid Sigelski?
Yes, I'm aware of a recent Carnegie Mellon University study that found that only 14% of respondents understood common insurance terms such as coinsurance, copayments, deductibles, and out-of-pocket payments. And here's the real kicker on that. This was a survey of individuals aged 25 to 64 who already had private health insurance. So if they're having difficulty with these terms and understanding this, insurance is a very complex transaction, very complex problem. And so then you throw into this a pool of people that have never had insurance before. And then if you look at the mental health piece, I think that just greatly expands that problem. And usually people, you know, most people when they want to find out about something, who do they ask? They go to ask family and friends. They don't
right.
necessarily ask, you know, the insurance or the individuals that are counselors for this. They don't know where to go. So they ask their local family or friend. They may say, well, I don't know anything about it either. So I think that's one of the biggest problems here is getting people to enroll. Second big problem, I think, is this whole system is based upon the healthy 25 to 35-year-olds enrolling that don't have insurance today. For them, the penalty is only something like $95 if they don't enroll. I think a lot of these people are going to say, gee, I don't need coverage. I'd rather pay the penalty and take the risk than seek coverage and have a monthly payment.
Sarah, why don't you weigh in? You listened to the interview with Gary Bazuca of North Central Healthcare. Your reactions to his concerns.
Thank you. I want to just quick respond to Sid. You know, $95 is the penalty, but it's $95 or 1% of your annual income. And so it's actually quite significant for those that are maybe making more, those young invincibles who may have, you know, snagged themselves a really good job and income, and it'll be 1% of their total income as a penalty, or 95%, depending on which is, again, higher.
So if you've got a $100,000 job, if you got a $100,000 job, it's a $1,000 penalty.
Exactly, versus $95. So that's an important clarification. And in terms of, you know, those individuals who think of themselves as invincible, I always talk about how I have pet insurance for my six-year-old golden retriever, because you never know. It's $30 a month, but it definitely would save me in the end versus $5,000 it would cost once my dog, you know, gets a hold of the garden hose and we have some sort of accident and situation. Young people all the time, you know, don't anticipate blowing out their knee, stepping off a curb, being on their bike and unfortunately getting hit by a vehicle, having contracted some sort of infectious disease, whatever it might be. I mean, you just don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And having even the catastrophic plan, having some low premiums but high deductibles once you have to actually seek care, It's really important that we talk about the importance of coverage and the financial and health security that provides. And then in terms of, again, the Medicaid issue, we're hearing that as a common theme throughout this hour. And I want to, again, just remind your listeners that we still, as a state, can decide to expand Medicaid and not have this population of very vulnerable individuals who are being shifted from the Medicaid comprehensive Medicare or Badger Care plan, as Laura describes, that includes dental, being shifted over into the marketplace. We can still do that. And for those individuals, until we do that as a state, it's really it's very exciting to see some groups like in Madison and Dane County, UW Health actually stepped up and raised $2 million to help provide subsidy assistance for those individuals, those vulnerable individuals that are being shifted off of BadgerCare. So once they qualify for tax credits and subsidies, they can apply to United Way and UW here in Madison to get a piece of that $2 million pot to help pay for those subsidies. So,
and does that apply to people all across the state and not just people in Madison?
No, it's just Dane County, but it just got announced this week, Glenn, and it'll be interesting to watch now across the state if other such healthcare organizations and community partners step up and do the same thing, recognizing the consequences of Governor Walker's decision.
Laura Scudero, you wanted to jump in here.
Oh, I just wanted to mention that I think when you really think about the average Bridge Clinic patient, I think every day we see patients whose lives have been devastated by some kind of catastrophic health issue and have had very, very severe financial repercussions because they didn't have any health insurance. And so Bridge Clinic, as a safety net provider, we often provide assistance and financial, you know, discounts for payments. But I think that's significant in making sure that everybody understands that that health insurance really helps prevent that possible catastrophic issue.
We're talking about the Affordable Care Act, the new exchanges with Laura Scudero, the Bridge Community Health Clinic, Sid Sigelski of Aspirus Wausau Hospital, and Sarah Finger of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health. We'd like to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742. We'll try to squeeze your question in before 11 o'clock. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act, and the hour has gone by much too quickly. We've got about another 5 minutes here. Gary Bazuka's other big concern, and Sid, I'd like you to comment on this again because you mentioned it earlier, the fact that people who have never had health insurance are going to go on these exchanges, buy the cheapest policy they can find, and then they'll be saddled with high deductibles and high copays that they can't afford.
Yeah, I agree with Gary on that. And, you know, this whole Health Care Act, I think, is a significant experiment. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. Are people going to sign up? Are the healthy 25 to 35-year-olds going to sign up? Are the mentally ill going to sign up? Are we going to see a lot of employers abandoning the traditional health insurance and forcing their employees onto health care exchanges? There's a lot of unknown here. It's interesting. I think there are a lot of good components of this, but no one, I don't think, can really predict what is going to happen here. But I think Gary's concern that people won't sign up, I think, is valid.
The president says many people will be able to get good quality health insurance for less than they pay each month for cell phone service. Is that true? And what about middle-aged people with serious health problems or pre-existing conditions?
I'm not an expert on the rates. I know there are a lot of subsidies that the federal government will provide. I think it's between 100% of the poverty guideline and 100 or 250%. There'll be subsidies. There'll be, I think, tax credits. Up to 500 or 400% of the poverty guideline. Somebody else may know that statistic more than I. But I don't know. I think I'll.
Sarah, you've been an advocate for the Affordable Care Act. Is that true? Can people actually get a health insurance policy for less than their cell phone bill?
It really depends, and I think Laura makes a really good point. I think you have to really go online to healthcare.gov, meet with a certified application counselor like again, Laura was mentioning, or call an 800 number here. There's so much riding on your individual preferences. Do you want to stay with your own doctor? What is your health history? What is your age? What is your family size? What is your income? And so, I mean, as Sid mentioned, the rates, I mean, everything is so specialized, and I apologize that we don't have all the information for every listener calling, because I know everybody's just, you know, clamoring to get that information, that security of knowing. But I'm going to give it 1-800-318-2596. So you talk about people with smartphones and cell phones. If you don't have that and you don't have online access, I really recommend you call 1-800-318-2596. It's staffed 24/7. And has translation services for up to 150 languages, and again, 24/7, call anytime, and then walk through this information because, it's so unique to each individual.
Sarah Finger, thanks so much. Laura Scuderi, anything you'd like to add? We've got to wrap things up.
Yes, if anybody is looking for a certified application counselor, I would recommend that they call United Way's 211, who could direct them to the one that's closest to them within a system that they're comfortable with.
And Sid Sigelski, you've got the last word here.
Yeah, just one last comment. I think one trend that's going to go on here, regardless of whether the Affordable Care Act is ever overturned or not, is that health care is probably going to be turned into a defined contribution benefit, much like a defined contribution retirement plan. Used to be people had defined benefit retirement plans where they had a pension of X amount per month. That became a contribution employers made to them every month. I think now that the concept of exchanges is out there, you're going to see a lot of employers over time contributing X amount of dollars per month for their employees' health insurance, and then they go either to a public exchange or a private exchange and make that purchase. So it's going to be shifted to them.
All right. Thank you so much, all of our guests. We want to thank today's guest, Sid Sigelski, the Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Finance for Aspirus Incorporated and Aspirus Wausau Hospital. Also, Laura Scuderi, Executive Director of the Bridge Community Health Clinic. Sarah Finger, Executive Director and Founder of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health. And Gary Bazooka, the CEO of North Central Healthcare. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our Executive Producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Robert Palmer, Jackson Brown, and Jimmy Reed. Remember to follow us on Facebook, and a reminder that Route 51 is now rebroadcast every Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.